Hello and welcome to our first edition of the Extronix Hazard Area IoT podcast. My name is Stuart Milne and I'll be your host for the podcast. Today I'm joined by CEO of Extronix, John Hartley, and our guest, James Eastwood, Technical Sales Engineer at Extronix. Welcome, gentlemen.
Morning. Yeah.
Hi.
On today's podcast, we're going to be talking about deploying hazardous area wireless, what it is, how certification for hazardous area devices is managed, and what options customers have in terms of protection concepts for their chosen wireless device. So let's dive right in. John, coming to you first, could you start by defining what we mean by hazardous area wireless?
Yeah, sure, Stuart. So what do we mean by hazardous area wireless? In essence, it's about bringing connectivity to the hazardous areas that we're all sort of accustomed to in normal life, you know, whether it be in our home life or actually in the work sort of environment, more what we're used to in manufacturing and general safe areas. Hazardous areas is always the last part of industry to be able to utilize the latest technology. So the goal is about achieving connectivity to provide more visibility in a hazardous area, to cover use cases such as personnel and asset tracking for safety of productivity, for instance, mustering of your personnel on site in the event of an emergency, rather than doing that with sort of paper-based manual sort of systems. Increasing security, utilizing CCTV in difficult areas where cabling may be difficult to install, so doing that wirelessly. A big thing that's coming in now is condition monitoring of the assets on a plant to prevent unexpected failures and shutdown of a process. So this is something we're seeing a lot more of in recent times. Another key use case is the inspection and maintenance of equipment. And you're doing this in things such as turnarounds, but also for there's a legal requirement to inspect all your EX equipment on a regular basis and document that, because at the end of the day, a safety equipment must be kept and maintained as such in good order. Otherwise, it isn't safe anymore. And in the past, that's pretty much been done by paper-based systems. So utilizing mobile devices like tablets and so on, and having them wirelessly connected allows that to be done basically online, and the database is updated as the inspections are happening. Another key use case is remote expert utilizing video collaboration. You know, I mean, we've all got used to using Teams during the pandemic, or Zoom, or WebEx, or whatever you want to call it. And these techniques and technologies can be actually deployed now in a hazardous area using headsets and so on, and devices that have been designed as such and certified intrinsically safe. Communications has always been something that is essential in any industrial facility. And in the past, that's been traditionally done using walkie-talkie type devices, more recently digital versions of those like Tetra. But now with smartphones being rolled out more, you're seeing the use of push-to-talk over LTE or Wi-Fi networks, replacing those radios. And things such as managing an incident and reporting on that, you can do that a lot better if you've got that connectivity and you can bring all the data in from the field to the sort of command and control center. So yeah, those are some of the key use cases and drivers of why customers are now wanting to install wireless connectivity into hazardous areas.
Oh, that's great. No, thanks for that, John. And I guess this naturally leads to questions about the safety of any wireless device used to achieve that range of use cases. So, James, coming to you now, could you please briefly sort of outline the different types of hazardous areas typically found in a process industry environment? So we can understand why installing uncertified devices isn't really a possibility in these areas.
Yeah, sure. So these hazardous areas, they're initially split into two categories, depending on what the hazard is. So for oil and gas processing on an offshore rig or an onshore refinery, there could be an explosive gas present. For industries like pharmaceutical, fragrances, it could be a combustible dust. So we've got gas certification, we've got dust certification. These areas are further classified into zones, which indicate how often that there's a risk of an explosion in that area. And the easiest analogy for people to visualize is a petrol forecourt, as an example, where you've got your fuel storage tanks and your tankers as a zone zero. A zone zero meaning that there's an explosive atmosphere continually present. You've then got areas around the filler caps and the nozzles and the pumps where it's likely to occur in normal operation that there's an explosive hazard, but it's only occasionally, and that's quantified by between 10 and 1,000 hours a year. And then you've got a zone two, and a zone two is safe in normal operation, but under fault conditions, an explosive atmosphere could be there for short periods of time. Now, it's important that uncertified devices don't go into any of these areas, because under a fault condition, there could be excessive heat on that device or equipment or a spark, which could trigger an explosion or a fire.
Mm-hmm. I suppose just thinking back to the analogy that you've given of the petrol forecourt, it never ceases to amaze me still how you see people using their mobile telephones, yeah, while they're filling up their vehicle, which we all know that they're not going to be using an intrinsically safe mobile telephone. And it's why there are actually signs around on the petrol forecourt to, you know, not smoke, which is a very obvious potential ignition source. But a less obvious one is the mobile phone. And people just don't realise that, you know, for instance, if they drop their phone, there's a good chance that the battery could become disconnected, for instance, or a damage to a circuit could be caused by a short circuit. And that could cause an ignition-capable scenario happening. And on the forecourt, generally speaking, it's fair to say that it's mainly all zone two, yeah? And the thing that can occur is, I think we've all done it, is you take your eye off the ball and you overfill the vehicle and some fuel sprays out onto the forecourt, and that actually then creates the potentially explosive atmosphere. So, you know, that's something, it doesn't cease to amaze me just how you still see people using their mobile phones. They're just not aware of the dangers of that.
Yeah, and I think when you think about a petrol station forecourt, that's something we use in our day-to-day lives. So it puts into context how serious it is in a process industry environment where there's a lot more hazardous area substances around all the time. So coming to you again, James, what are the types of standards that all wireless devices must adhere to when deployed in these areas?
Yeah, I suppose there's different groups of standards, and which one you use is going to depend on where you are in the world, what country you're in. In the past, it used to be that ATEX was used in Europe and something like NEC500 would be used in the US. And if you were certifying a product for ATEX, it'd need a lot more development, testing, design work to comply with NEC500, as they were two very different beasts. With IECEx came more harmonized standards, and now most countries will either accept IECEx or will have a local certification type based on IECEx. Even in the US, they have NEC505 now, which is again more in line with IECEx and the to be technical IEC 60079 standards. And as a manufacturer like Extronix, this makes it a lot easier for us to now develop products that can be accepted globally. I touched on the 60079 standards there. The substandards of that are then what you would specifically adhere to. So part zero of that standard is the general requirements for all equipment. Part one is specific to explosion-proof enclosures. Part seven for increased safety. Part 11 for intrinsic safety, for example. There's a long list.
Yeah, and I think you touched on a really great point, which is since IECX came into play, it has made it much easier this last decade or more, really. We've seen it almost 20 years now, where the standards are very similar. So yes, you still are likely to need a local certificate, as James touched on, yeah, but you won't have to change the design of your product to be able to comply with that. So it has made it much easier to obtain certification, albeit you still have to go through a process and get the local version of the certificate. But you don't have to change the design of your product, which means equipment therefore is more generally available nowadays than it was in the past. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. I think expanding on a bit more James's comments there, John, for when we think about a manufacturer like Extronix, how do companies that are producing hazardous area equipment remain compliant to these standards? Is there anything specific they need to do?
Well, other than the first thing, which is you've got to get your equipment certified, yeah. So you go through a notified body, which basically verifies that the design of your product is in accordance with the standards, which James mentioned, 60079 series of standards, or the local equivalents. So, yeah, you get your product certified, but that's not it. So you go through that arduous process, but you're not allowed to actually manufacture those products unless you as a company have the necessary credentials and quality standards. So for IECX, you've got the quality assessment report, the quality assurance notification for ATEX, and what these are, it's a set of procedures and processes which ensure the compliance during the manufacturing process, so that you can be assured as a user that the actual equipment is compliant to the type approval. I mean, I remember when I first started in the EX world, you just used to have to go and get the product certified, and that was it. But what they found through various investigations after particular serious disasters and accidents was that a lot of the equipment, whilst it was certified, it actually wasn't being manufactured in accordance with the type approval. So they really then tightened up, and it became a regulatory requirement that you have to be audited. You're just having ISO 9000 isn't enough. You need extra procedures and processes in place which are audited. And the actual North American certification scheme actually requires 4 audits a year of the manufacturing site where the actual equipment is being manufactured. So there are some subtle differences, but just getting a certificate doesn't mean you can then go and manufacture the device. You've got to get those extra things. And that is an extra burden on a business. And especially if this is something that you're not accustomed to doing. So like a lot of tech companies, this is all very specialized, and it's why a lot of modern technology is not available for use in hazardous areas immediately, because the market is small and the barriers to entry are high and the specialist knowledge. So is it really worth bothering investing in that? And that's where we sort of come in with our wireless enclosure system concept, really. Yeah. where we can basically use any wireless, and we just make it easy to take the standard tech that you want to use in, and you are using in your safe area, and you can then deploy it into your hazardous area.
Perfect. That's really insightful. So we've got a clear understanding of the different types of hazardous area now and how it's managed in relation to deploying some of the wireless devices that people use in these areas. So, John, what options does a person on the ground have when deciding on a choice of wireless device for their hazardous area? You touched on it a bit there, but I wonder if you could just expand on that a little bit more.
Just go over that again. Sorry, I missed.
Yeah. So what I was, when we think about somebody on the ground in a processing plant and they're deciding on what type of wireless device they want to put in their hazardous area, what options do they have in terms of being able to do that? Is it a case of going to buy one off the shelf, or do they have to come to someone like it?
Right.
Trying to understand that concept a little bit more.
Well, the most obvious thing that you can do is take an already pre-certified device. But as I touched on in my last comments, the barriers to entry, I mean, for instance, it costs roughly to get approvals for ATEX and IECX and maybe a North American on a simple product, could be around $50,000 or more just to get the approvals. Then you've got to get in all the quality assessments and all that sort of stuff. So the costs are quite high, and it can take anything from a year to 2 years. That's quite common. So this is why you don't see a lot of latest tech coming out, which is EX certified, just because of those barriers. So because of all that, the other option is to take a pre-certified wireless EX enclosure, because what that then allows you to do is use your preferred hardware that, like, you're using in the safe area, then install that into a hazardous area without all those certification costs, because the actual enclosure itself is pre-certified and allows flexible and easy deployment of that wireless device. So you really haven't got any development costs as a manufacturer. You can partner with a company like Extronix, and pretty much as long as your device fits in the enclosure and meets a few simple criteria, your device is then enabled to be installed in the different types of hazardous area that James touched on earlier. And the key advantages of that is, you've got an option. You can either wait for the manufacturer of the device that you're using in the safe area to build a business case to justify developing a EX version of that product, or you can not wait and roll out the technology now using the pre-certified enclosures. And it is becoming a more common approach now. And it's recognized some of the advantages, which I know we're going to touch on later, of using a wireless enclosure. But the key thing is why do you want to wait to continue digital transformation in a hazardous area? You know, why wait? Yeah, when you can do it now.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point.
And just to touch on another advantage is it does offer future proofing as well, because you can take a wireless enclosure system, deploy the tech, and then, as we all know, technology changes rapidly. We've seen this just through how Wi-Fi's evolved, and we're now on Wi-Fi 6, so the sixth iteration of Wi-Fi in pretty much just over a decade. So every couple of years, you're getting a new version, which is better, faster, more stable, you know, all these advantages as things evolve. So with a wireless enclosure, you can upgrade it. So it's a future-proof solution. And we've started to see that with some of our historical customers, where we're now actually doing upgrades of equipment. So the enclosure system itself and all the associated cabling, antennas, which is where a big part of the cost is, because the installation cost is very large, we're actually supplying new chassis with new latest wireless equipment, which is then easily and upgraded on site by the customer. And it means they can then take advantage of the latest tech without having to have the huge cost all over again.
Yeah, that's a really good point there. And I think, James, coming back to you now, John specifically made a point there about the limited number of pre-certified hazardous area wireless devices that are sort of keeping up to date with the latest technology. I wondered if you could give our listeners a bit of an overview of some of the most common protection concepts seen for these devices and how people would deploy them.
Yeah, absolutely. And as John said, you know, we have our enclosure solutions, and this is typical. And this allows you to install non-certified equipment. So a standard piece of wireless hardware that a customer might be using in their safe areas already. And the most common protection concept there is EXD, or explosion proof, suitable for zone 1, zone 2, zone 21, zone 22, gas and dust. The protection concept there is a gas could possibly get inside that box, and you've got uncertified equipment inside that box. There could be a spark which ignites that gas, but the enclosure is constructed in such a way that the flame from the explosion can't possibly propagate outwards, and the enclosure won't be damaged or warped afterwards. So this is a really good protection concept. It's very flexible and versatile, and is used a lot in hazardous areas, not just for wireless devices, but for high power components like UPSs, motor starters, etc. Another protection concept that you could use, which allows you to install non-certified devices, is EXNR, or restricted breathing. It's only suitable for zone 2, but the premise here is that the enclosure is sealed so tightly that in the event of a gas hazard being present, there's not enough time for gas to be aspirated inside that box in such a concentration to make an explosive mixture. Okay. These protection concepts are great for fixed panels, but as John said in, I think, the first question, we're not just talking about wireless access points and gateways. We're talking about wearables and sensors for other use cases. And for that, you'd want to adopt something like intrinsic safety, or EXI. The concept there being that there's such little energy or power in the circuits that even under fault conditions, it couldn't possibly get hot enough or create a spark that could ignite a gas or a dust. For electronic devices, this requires a lot of R&D, custom circuitry and design to re-engineer, let's say, a smartphone to be such low power. But you can also use a device, an intrinsically safe barrier inside a panel that can protect an external circuit. And this allows you to use standard passive devices as simple apparatus. A passive device being things like a thermocouple, a push button, and in our case, in the wireless context, antennas. So instead of having to use a limited number of pre-certified bulky antennas, our approach is we protect the RF channel with a barrier so that a customer can use essentially any antenna and really optimize the wireless coverage that they've got.
Yeah, you touched on the intrinsic safety concept, and it's a really important point and differentiator in our case with the wireless enclosure systems to use any antennas. But one misconception we do come across, the number of times we get asked for an intrinsically safe enclosure. Yeah. Well, they don't exist, really. There's no such thing as an intrinsically safe enclosure. You hear about iSafe. This is another sort of name for intrinsic safety that is bandied about quite a lot. But essentially, as James has said, there's only really two concepts that are practical for use for deploying standard non-certified EX equipment, into hazardous areas, and they don't suit things like a smartphone or a tablet PC, because you put those enclosures types around them, the device then becomes either unusable or extremely heavy or bulky and so on, which is why the devices generally, the mobile devices, they're certified from the ground up, as James said, using things like intrinsic safety. But for fixed equipment like wireless gateways and so on, and wireless devices, then those concepts we mentioned are really, really suitable and allow that big degree of flexibility. You can't just put anything in there. There are quite a lot of checks that we have to do to meet the certification requirements on the type approval that we've got. But over the last decade or more, while we've been evolving this product concept, we've added more and more flexibility in the certificate, including being able to install batteries, for instance, so that you can do battery backup or solar power gateways and things like that. It really is flexible, but the other part I do want to reiterate more and just emphasize a little more is about the antenna side, because in the early approach when we were doing this, our first wireless enclosure systems, we used specially certified antennas. It was designed as a EX product and with all the associated costs and things like that. But you're very limited because you've got to make different antennas and get those all certified. And that's where we realized, no, we need to utilize intrinsic safety for the RF circuitry, because that means we can use pretty much any antenna, meaning the RF engineer can deploy wireless in a hazardous area just the same as they would employ it in a safe area.
It certainly brings another level of flexibility to the end user, doesn't it? So I think that's great, guys. Thanks for covering that. I just wanted to finish on a little bit about the technology and specifically about how it's progressed. I think it's fair to say that over the last 15 years or so, the choice of wireless technology has evolved to a point where there's so many options for customers. John, could you briefly comment on the variety of devices we're now seeing in the marketplace, and especially with your experience over the last 15 years with how Extronics has evolved in that area as well?
Yeah. I mean, it's amazing, really, just what wireless technology there is out there now. And a lot of it being driven by the consumer market as well. You know, we're all used to Wi-Fi. That was the first one. We saw it early in business, then we had it in our homes. And that was pretty much exclusively what we did in the first 5+ years of doing wireless enclosure systems. It was only Wi-Fi, because that was pretty much, that was all around really that was practical, other than the mobile phone type products, you know, the GSM and 2G and that type of thing. But they were just early portable devices that were to that standard. You weren't deploying the actual network infrastructure. But it's amazing what's come along. And I'd say, especially in the last 5 years, the plethora of different devices. BLE is something that really is starting to get a lot more attention now as a standard, a wireless standard, because it's very, very low powered. So it's ideal for applications for tracking solutions, because your tags, your asset tags, your personnel tags can last, you know, 5 years on a battery because it's so low powered. It's amazing me actually now how many BLE based sensors there are on the market, especially for condition monitoring. You know, things like vibration of rotating machinery. And this is why we've actually now just about looked to launch hazardous area BLE gateways, because there's a call for that coming, because these a number of companies offering these intrinsically safe sensors, they don't have a BLE gateway. They did the sensor, the BLE gateway is something that we're able to help with, and either they can use our version of it, but if they've got a preference and their own specific gateway, those OEMs, those manufacturers, we can take their standard gateway and offer them a solution very easily. UHF RFID is another one. We've done the odd project over the last decade, but it's only now just starting to become a little more common, where customers are wanting to track assets using passive UHF RFID tags, and then through sort of doorways and into different areas of the plant. Sort of, we call it like a portal. You go through that portal into the next zone. They're doing zonal location. LoRaWAN. This is now starting to come across our radar, and we've done a couple of LoRaWAN gateways recently. And many people go, why do you need a LoRa gateway in a hazardous area? Because surely with its range of kilometers, we can just mount them outside the hazardous area. And that's true, you can. It does go a long way, but you will get some areas of the plant that actually you won't get good connectivity. And once you really get into LoRa and you understand how it works, the actual data rate of LoRa to get the range drops dramatically. And this means you're on air more often. This then has an effect on the battery life of the sensor. So actually having a higher density of LoRaWAN gateways provides much better connectivity and also much longer battery life for your sensors. So that's even come around. I never thought there'd be a market for a hazardous area LoRaWAN gateway, but there is definitely. And we're starting to see more requests coming from some of the LoRaWAN network service providers that are out there. I sort of could go on. There's such a lot of new tech, but customers wanting to mix both BLE and Wi-Fi in one solution. Yeah, so put one gateway out there and do BLE and Wi-Fi in one enclosure system. So multiple radio technologies in one enclosure system is another trend that we're starting to see now. And I'm sure there'll be other standards coming and new things. I mean, Wi-Fi 6, James, we've done our first Wi-Fi 6 solutions, haven't we, recently, upgraded a particular client's existing BG network that they deployed many years ago. We did a big refurb, didn't we, on Wi-Fi 6?
Yeah, hundreds of units. It was, and was just seeing it more and more. Either with upgrades or just in new requests, we want to use this latest technology for this new deployment. What are our options?
Yeah.
And the answer is almost always whatever you prefer.
Yeah. I mean, the last thing that I think is worthy of mention, and it's something we're keeping an eye on, is there's a new opportunity coming for industry, which is the adoption of LTE networks privately. So that's been the realms of the telco in the past, where LTE networks were pretty much rolled out for the general consumer to do their mobile comms and data connectivity. We all do it, and they're run and they're national networks. And then came private LTE, which you still had to go to the telco, you know, your Vodafone, your Verizon. But if you were a refinery close by to a cell tower, you got reasonable coverage across your facility. So you could actually rent bandwidth. So you had a dedicated connectivity on your plant that you could rely on and so on. But it was still run by the telco. They would even, if they didn't have good coverage, come and put a mast and a base station on your site. But of course, there's quite large costs to go with that. So whilst there's not a lot of infrastructure to put in, there's a big ongoing cost, but it's a trend. But now the organisations that manage the spectrum, so like the FCC in the US and Ofcom in the UK, they're now starting to make spectrum available to deploy your own private LTE network. And there are equipment vendors now bringing out this new, you could call it smaller scale, wireless solution around being able to deploy LTE yourself, so you don't need to go to a telco. It's still early days, and at the moment there's not a huge amount of portable equipment to utilize on it, especially hazardous area certified, but it's certainly something that we've got our eye on, and we're starting to assess what opportunities this could present for us, because provided the equipment will fit into our wireless enclosure systems, yeah, we can deploy it in a hazardous area.
Yeah, so that's really interesting. I think certainly the sort of hot topic at the minute from the process industries is that rapid progression of digitalization across their facilities. So it is starting to pick up pace for sure. Gentlemen, thank you so much for the input today on our very first podcast. For the listeners, we hope you found the content of today's discussion useful. Please follow us on LinkedIn, where we'll be posting all of our latest podcasts and lots of other useful content for you to access. If you do have any questions off the back of today's podcast, please get in touch by emailing us at info@extronix.com, or you can visit our website at www.extronix.com, where you can find all of our contact information. Thank you for listening, and please join us again soon for another edition of the Hazardous Area IoT podcast.